Hello, I'm Georgina Marshall, Global Head of Research at ISS, and welcome to the May Proxy Bulletin podcast for the Asia-Pacific region. Today's focus is the fast-approaching Japan proxy season. Joining me with a preview of the upcoming AGM activity in Japan, including a discussion of the anticipated impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic on the season, is Mark Goldstein. Clients who have joined us over the past few years will probably know Mark best as our head of US research. Many long-term time clients, however, will recall that Mark is an expert on Japan as well and a veteran of many Japan seasons. Our head of Japanese research, Takeyuki Yoshida, is busy preparing his team in Tokyo for the upcoming season at the moment. So Mark has stepped in today on this podcast to share his experience. Mark, hi, I know that Japan season is always challenging due to the immense concentration of so many AGMs in a short period, and that Japan has also had to contend with both natural and man-made disasters impacting a few proxy seasons over the years. In your experience, do any of these past disruptions compare to the anticipated impacts of the coronavirus pandemic on the upcoming season?
Well, Georgina, not really. The pandemic's impact will be unprecedented. While there are still expected to be a very large number of AGMs held during the peak days of late June, due to meeting postponements or the need to reconvene AGMs that are held as scheduled in June and then adjourned, a season that usually finishes very cleanly by the end of June may end up stretching out over months.
And what's driving Japanese companies' choices either to postpone or adjourn their meetings?
Well, normally, Japanese companies are required to disclose their financial results and hold their general meetings within 3 months after the fiscal year end, which for close to two-thirds of Japanese companies, roughly 2,400, fell on March 31st. Typically, the financial results are announced by mid-May, which is a prerequisite for companies to complete their audit and conduct other year-end activities. This normally predictable process leads to the release of proxy circulars in late May or early June for shareholder meetings, which are most often scheduled for late June. Reporting audited financial statements at the meeting is mandatory, and failure to do so could lead to delisting. Due to the pandemic, however, there appear to be significant delays in the audit process at many companies. Given these issues, the Ministry of Justice, the Financial Services Agency, and the Tokyo Stock Exchange have come up with two options for companies that are unable to report audited financial statements in a timely fashion. They can either postpone their meetings or adjourn them.
Okay, let's look at those two options one at a time. First, what happens if a meeting is postponed?
Well, under the postponement option, companies can delay both the disclosure of their financial statements and their general meeting to a later date. Shareholders will be able to review the voting items and cast their votes at a meeting once the audited financial statements and the business report are available. Ordinarily, the fiscal year end is the record date for dividends and for voting rights at the annual meeting. Companies opting for this postponement choice must establish a new record date for the postponed AGM. If a shareholder vote is required to approve a dividend payment, a new dividend record date will also need to be set.
Okay, that sounds at least fairly straightforward in that case, although it will change some meeting timings and record dates this year significantly, of course. How does that option differ from the adjournment option?
Under the adjournment option, there is no need for the company to establish a new record date, and it can hold its general meeting as originally planned in June. All ballot items will be voted, but after the voting is closed, the meeting will be adjourned until a later date when the audited financial results become available. As all valid votes will have been cast prior to the adjournment, however, no ballot items can be voted at the resumed meeting. Instead, shareholders will only be able to review the audited financial statements and business report at the resumed meeting. In other words, regardless of any concerns that they may have based on what they see in the financials or business report, shareholders won't be able to vote or recast their ballots at the reconvened meeting.
And voting without the audited financials and other business report information in hand sounds pretty problematic. Do we know yet which of these two paths are likely to be taken by Japanese companies?
Well, it's unclear at this point because most companies have not yet indicated their plans. As of this point, we are aware of approximately 40 companies that are considering postponing their meetings to a later date and roughly 85 companies that are considering the adjournment option. However, only 19 companies so far have officially announced postponements, and only 4 have officially announced adjournments.
Before we get into the policy impacts of companies that choose to go down the adjournment path, and assuming that most meetings aren't suddenly postponed, what do we expect the peak AGM dates for the existing 2020 Japan season, as we understand it, to be?
Well, we anticipate that the peak meeting day for 2020 will be Friday, the 26th of June, when roughly 1/3 of June annual meetings are still expected to be held based on our best current estimates. The previous day, Thursday, June 25th, is expected to be the second busiest day, with about 1/4 of the June meetings anticipated. These peak days may be subject to change, of course, based on how many companies decide to postpone their meetings.
Okay, great. Thank you for explaining that, Mark. And in the wake of the pandemic, at ISS, we announced some adjustment to the application of our ISS Global Benchmark and Specialty Voting Policies for the 2020 season. We did that last week. This week, we also announced some additional market-specific changes for Japan in light of what's happening. Let's walk through those Japan changes, starting with return on equity, a totally Japan-specific policy. How will our ROE policy be applied this season?
So under the ISS Japan voting policy, we generally recommend votes to oppose the re-election of top executives when companies have underperformed in terms of capital efficiency, with return on equity as the measurement tool. Normally, we make such negative recommendations when a company has posted average ROE of less than 5% over the last 5 fiscal years, unless ROE has been 5% or greater for the most recent fiscal year. However, due to the significant impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on companies' performance in 2020, and that includes the fourth quarter of the fiscal year that just ended on March 31st, ROE may not be an appropriate indicator to measure capital efficiency at many companies this year. Accordingly, ISS will be suspending the application of the ROE policy to Japanese director elections for the time being.
How will we adjust our recommendations at firms that decide to adjourn their meetings, whether financial statements and business reports aren't available?
Well, as noted earlier, due to delays in completing the audits as a result of the pandemic, some companies may opt for the adjourned meeting approach. In that case, their shareholder meeting, so let's call that the first meeting, will be held on the originally scheduled date, but the audited financial statements and business report will not be available for shareholders to consider when making their voting decisions. Once the votes are cast, the meeting will then be adjourned to a later date. That adjourned meeting, which we can call the second meeting, will be resumed once the audited financial statements do become available. However, it will be resumed for the sole purpose of reporting the audited financials and business report. Shareholders will not be able to change the votes cast at the first meeting based on this new information, nor can they simply wait and vote at the second meeting. So normally, general meetings are held after the disclosure of audited financial statements and business reports, and shareholders can use those to make informed decisions. So the adjourned meeting option is, in our view, far from ideal. We have decided, therefore, to recommend abstain votes on certain ballot items when companies force shareholders to cast their ballots without the benefit of access to the audited financial statements and the business report.
And can you explain the impact of an abstain vote in the Japanese market?
Sure. Abstain is a valid voting item, valid voting option, I should say, in Japan, and an abstain vote is not the same as the absence of a vote. When shareholders cast abstain votes at Japanese meetings, the votes will be included in determining the quorum and also included in the denominator when calculating the final results. Therefore, an abstain vote has a similar effect as a vote against the proposal.
What types of voting items will be impacted by by our switch to abstain recommendations?
Well, dividends, changes in audit firms, and compensation issues top the list. For companies whose articles require shareholder approval to pay out final dividends, in normal times, dividends are proposed and voted on only after audited financial statements are available. This year, for companies choosing the adjournment option, there are concerns that dividend determinations made before the audited financial statements are available may turn out to be excessive. Such dividend commitments may negatively impact a company's financial health and its ability to use cash for other corporate purposes, when the long-term impact of the pandemic on corporate operations is still unknown. Given the high level of uncertainty posed by the pandemic, prudent shareholders may find it inappropriate to approve final dividend payments before the audited financials are available. Accordingly, we will be recommending an abstain vote on income allocation proposals, i.e. dividend proposals, this year at meetings that will be adjourned where no audited financials are available. Next issue is auditors. So in Japan, shareholder votes on the appointment of the external auditor are required only when an auditor change is proposed. Last June, auditor appointments were on the ballot at about 3% of Japanese meetings. Under normal circumstances, shareholders may want to review the outgoing auditor's report before voting on a proposal seeking to appoint a new auditor. If the audit is not complete and the outgoing auditor's report is not available for review, shareholders may not be available, may not be able to evaluate the appropriateness of the proposed change. In such circumstances this year, an abstain vote will be recommended on the appointment of an external auditor. And the next issue is compensation. So certain compensation-related proposals, such as stock options, deep discounted stock options, restricted stock awards, performance-based shares, and annual bonuses, are normally evaluated within the context of the company's financial performance and its financial standing. Therefore, when the audit is not complete and the financial statements and business report are unavailable, shareholders cannot fully evaluate such proposals. Accordingly, an abstain vote will be recommended on those types of compensation proposals at adjourned meetings this year. Finally, for proposals seeking to increase the director compensation ceiling, under current ISS Japan policy, when it is not clearly stated in the proposal that the increase is intended to increase the proportion of performance-based compensation, we will normally review the company's financial performance, again, as measured by ROE. But as this ROE review will not be possible when the audited financials are unavailable and may not be appropriate this year, an abstain vote will be recommended in any cases where the company is seeking to increase the compensation ceiling for directors, but has not clearly stated that this increase is intended to raise the proportion of performance-based compensation.
And beyond the increase of abstain in those particular situations, what other voting items are expected to be impacted by the adjournments?
Well, at meetings that will be adjourned, shareholders will be asked to vote on director and statutory auditor elections without access to the audited financials and the business report. So it will be difficult for shareholders to make informed voting judgments without being able to review the company's financial and operating performance, the attendance records of the directors and outside auditors, statutory auditors, and information to determine the independence of those outside director and statutory auditor candidates. When such information is not available this year, our team will use past disclosures as an alternative source of information on the director and statutory auditor elections and their independence classifications. Concerning attendance at board meetings, shareholders will be able to evaluate attendance records only when that information is disclosed in the proxy circular. And I need to clarify here that some companies have been bundling the business report together with the proxy circular, but they are, legally speaking, separate documents. And this year we may see companies disclose a circular with just the voting item information without the business report. So even before the COVID-19 pandemic, some companies with proactive disclosure practices had already been disclosing the attendance records in the proxy circular for shareholders' convenience. Attendance records are not complex, therefore they should be easily disclosed by companies. Putting the information in the proxy circular should not place an additional burden on companies. And so companies opting for the adjourned meeting option are encouraged to disclose this information in their proxy circulars. So it's available even if the business report is not yet available. If the attendance information is not disclosed in the proxy circular, an adverse vote will be recommended under the ISS Japan policy for poor information disclosure.
And beyond the guidance we've provided with relation to the impact of the pandemic, are there any other ISS policy changes for 2020 that are notable?
Yes, there are two material changes to the ISS Japan benchmark policy. The first change relates to director independence criteria. So starting in February, ISS now considers outside director candidates who currently work or previously worked at companies whose shares are held by the company in question as cross shareholdings to be non-independent. The second change relates to board independence requirements for controlled companies, which make up a significant percentage of companies in Japan, somewhere around 8 or 10%. ISS has long employed a policy calling on companies with a controlling shareholder to have at least two independent directors, but the new policy additionally stipulates that at least one-third of the board members should be independent outside directors.
And many Japanese boards have, of course, long been criticized for their general lack of transparency and accountability resulting from insider domination. We've seen some positive changes in recent years, however. Do you expect to see this boardroom trend continue?
Well, yes. In recent years, many Japanese boards have improved in terms of independence. According to our data, the percentage of companies where at least one-third of board members are outsiders reached 48% for companies that held their meetings during the second quarter of 2019, and that's up from 41% for the 2018 calendar year. So nearly half.
Yeah, okay. And how about any new trends in compensation practices for Japan?
Well, while the magnitude of director and executive pay in Japan remains moderate by international standards, the absence of incentive structures that link pay to shareholder value creation will remain a source of controversy. Cash salaries and cash retirement bonuses, neither of which are directly linked to performance, constitute the bulk of Japanese executives' pay. Performance-based pay, where it exists at all, usually constitutes a small portion of director total compensation. And furthermore, equity-based incentives, most notably stock options, are still not really popular among Japanese firms. Nevertheless, there is a trend toward the greater use of performance-based pay. Firms have started to link executive pay to performance measures such as ROE, operating profit, or net profit. In addition, some companies link pay to the achievement of objectives in the management plan. Some Japanese companies have adopted equity compensation plans that operate through trusts. Under such plans, a trust bank, retained by the company as its trustee, typically purchases company shares via the open market or acquires treasury shares held by the company. Shares are transferred to plan participants after a period of time, at which point the shares become fully disposable at the discretion of the grantee. As such, these trusts effectively function like restricted stock plans. In evaluating compensation plans of this type, we look at the following conditions, all of which must be met to recommend support for the proposal. First, the recipients should only include individuals who are able to have some impact on the company's stock price. So we recommend opposing plans, for instance, if the recipients include employees of business partners or vaguely defined affiliates of the firm. Second, ISS guidelines call for potential dilution of no more than 5% for a mature company or 10% for a growth company. In addition, if the maximum number of shares to be reserved for the plan is not disclosed, we will recommend opposition based on poor disclosure. Third, specific performance hurdles should be disclosed, but that's still rare for Japanese companies. Therefore, even if such conditions are not disclosed, we will recommend support for equity compensation plans of this type if they have a vesting period of at least 3 years, or in cases where the recipient is going to retire within 3 years, the shares should be granted, transferred to the recipients only after their retirement. Due to recent tax reforms, our Japan team also expects that many Japanese companies will propose more traditional restricted stock plans. And when I say traditional, I mean like those in other countries, restricted stock plans at the upcoming meetings. In addition, it is expected that some companies will propose performance shares. We evaluate such plans with the same guidelines applied to the above-mentioned trust-type equity compensation plans.
Thanks, Mark. And moving next to shareholder proposals, do you anticipate any trends in shareholder proposal activity for this Japan season?
Well, the number of shareholder proposals at Japanese meetings has been on the rise in recent years. However, this year, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, The number of shareholder proposals is expected to remain at or below last year's levels. Notably, some popular topics for proposals in recent years, such as seeking to boost shareholder returns via dividends and share buybacks, appear to be out of step with people's mindset due to the pandemic. Instead, we expect shareholders to focus on promoting better board practices, improved disclosure, and, as always, the phase out of nuclear power generation. One notable environmental shareholder proposal is being voted on at Mizuho Financial Group. Mizuho, which is one of Japan's three megabanks, received a proposal seeking disclosure on its business strategy to align its investments with the goals of the Paris Agreement. So other than proposals submitted by anti-nuclear groups at electric power companies, this climate change resolution represents the first time that a Japanese company has received such an environment-related shareholder proposal.
Okay, that will be interesting. And finally, Mark, what are some other meetings to watch for this season, however extended it may turn out to be?
Well, shareholders should keep an eye out for meetings at Kansai Electric Power, or KEPCO, at Mitsubishi Electric, and at Recruit Holdings, all of which had interesting scandals in the past year. In a significant nuclear bribery scandal, KEPCO announced that many of its executives, including directors, had received substantial sums of money and gifts going back over 30 years from Eiji Moriyama, the late deputy mayor of Takahama Town in Fukui Prefecture, where KEPCO's nuclear power station is located. The company's third-party investigation committee uncovered collusion between Moriyama and KEPCO. Moriyama apparently came to learn some unfavorable information about KEPCO back in the 1980s when the company experienced some trouble in Takahama. KEPCO began offering construction projects to a contractor associated with Moriyama in the 2000s, and over time, the number of such contracts totaled more than 380. According to the investigation report, Moriyama gave money and gifts worth about 360 million yen to a total of 75 directors and staff of KEPCO and its subsidiaries. The issue first came to light in February 2018 when an inquiry by the Regional Tax Bureau triggered an in-house investigation at KEPCO. Now, the utility receives a great number of shareholder proposals every year, as in over 20 in some years, and the same is expected this year as well. At Mitsubishi Electric Corporation, a new employee in his 20s committed suicide in August 2019, and papers pertaining to the case were sent to the Hyogo Prefectural Police, alleging that his supervisor instigated the suicide by verbal abuse. According to a March report in the magazine Toyo Keizai, six Mitsubishi Electric employees have been granted workers' compensation and five others have committed suicide since 2012, citing reasons including bullying and excessive overtime exceeding 100 hours per month. In a separate incident, Mitsubishi Electric retained and then failed to prevent the leak of personal information and confidential information, which included information designated by Japan's Defense Ministry as requiring caution. In other words, classified information. This information was provided in hard copy form by the Defense Ministry to Mitsubishi Electric and was supposed to be returned to the ministry after its use. However, although the hard copy was returned, the company had stored the information electronically, and then that was part of the information that leaked. Many shareholders may wish to pay attention to the policies and practices the company is implementing to prevent recurrences of such serious issues. And finally, Recruit Career Company, a wholly owned subsidiary of Recruit Holdings, announced the suspension of one of its services called Rikunabi DMP Follow on August 1st of last year. This service used the history of job-seeking students' online behavior on the Rikunabi recruitment information website to predict their likelihood of declining job offers, and then sold that information to prospective employers. On August 26th, Recruit Career apologized at a press conference. It turns out that they used data of about 75,000 Rikunabi users to calculate the likelihood of students declining job offers, and then sold the information of about 8,000 students to external parties without obtaining consent. The company's parent, Recruit Holdings, also used the service. Also on August 26th, the government's Personal Information Protection Commission issued corrective recommendations and guidance to Recruit Career saying the company breached the Act on the Protection of Professional, Personal Information. The Tokyo Labor Bureau also issued administrative guidance to Recruit Holdings and Recruit Career on December 11th, after determining that the companies also breached the Employment Security Act and Labor Ministry policies. In a press conference on December 13th, Katsunobu Kato, the Minister of Health, Labor, and Welfare, told reporters that the ministry was finishing the issuance of administrative guidance in accordance with the Employment Security Act to the 38 companies that used this service. Many shareholders may wish to pay attention to the policies and practices that Recruit implements to prevent recurrences of such breaches.
And that is it for our Japan Proxy Season Preview. Thank you so much, Mark, and thanks so much to you, our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Please watch your email for the next installment and send any feedback or questions to bulletin@issgovernance.com. Goodbye for now and stay safe.